This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The people of Hong Kong continue their massive protests. Yesterday, 1.7 million people were in the streets in peaceful protests, organizers say. Meanwhile, there's a technology story that's also playing out alongside the politics. Cameras are everywhere in the streets of Hong Kong, and they use facial recognition technology to record who is on the streets. Well, protesters have been trying to thwart that surveillance, and they're using some pretty low-tech methods: masks, goggles, and blinding the cameras using lasers. But there are some high-tech methods in the works, too, and we want to explore that now. And you can join us. What's your question about facial recognition technology and how law enforcement uses it? Are you concerned about it? Do you think it's time to push back? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. As always, we're also on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us today from London is Tom Standage. He's deputy editor and former technology editor at The Economist. He's also co-host of the podcast The Secret History of the Future. The Economist recently published a story headlined "Fooling Big Brother: As Face Recognition Technology Spreads, So Do Ideas for Subverting It." And we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hello, good to be here.
So first of all, tell us about some of the more about the low-tech methods that Hong Kong protesters are using to fool the cameras that are watching them.
Sure. So if you look at pictures and video from the protests in Hong Kong, you can see that a lot of people are wearing yellow hard hats, but they're also wearing ski goggles or swimming goggles or scarves, or very often a combination of the two, or masks over their faces. And generally, they're just trying to make sure that if you get that it's impossible to get a clear view of their face. So that I think what they're concerned about not so much is not so much the use of facial recognition systems now. There are cameras around. I think they're worried that this is something that could be used against them in the future, because there are clearly police taking lots of high-resolution pictures. And what happened with the previous round of protests called the Umbrella Revolution a few years ago is that when all the protests have subsided, many of the leaders of that movement were subsequently arrested. And so this is a way of ensuring that participation in these protests now can't be used to track them down later, I think.
And this is, in fact, the same concern that people in other nations have about the creeping use of facial recognition technology, right? I mean, to your point, cameras are already everywhere. The question is, what will law enforcement do with it? I mean, if one day you're peacefully protesting and exercising your rights to free expression, but then, you know, a year later you get arrested for some kind of activity, that's because your face has been identified and stored in government databases, right?
Well, this is a concern that is it's not just limited to Hong Kong. We have a big debate about this going on in Britain at the moment. It turns out that a few police forces have been testing facial recognition in public, and a lot of people think they shouldn't have been allowed to do that because they haven't got consent from people. There's obviously a big debate about this in the U.S., where we see several cities saying they're going to ban it. We see employees at big tech companies saying, we don't want the technology that the company we work for is producing to be used by repressive regimes. We see repressive regimes around the world looking at what China is doing in the west of China, in Xinjiang, where it's using facial recognition to monitor the Uyghur people, and saying, oh, look, China's obviously got some very good technology for keeping people in their place, and we would like some of that too. So we see interest from that in places like Egypt. So yes, there's a big debate going on both in democracies and in more autocratic countries about what the appropriate use of this technology is.
And regarding the U.S. cities, thinking specifically of San Francisco and Oakland, saying they're going to forbid law enforcement for the time being from using this technology. So there's a big sort of policy-related question about what governments and agencies should be allowed to do, how long they should be allowed to keep these images, etc. But I also want to talk with you, Tom, about what The Economist has written about, that there's sort of this growing movement of people trying to find high and low tech ways to thwart it. Now, first of all, this technology has gotten very, very good, right? Accuracy rates in the 98% to 99%.
Yes, you have to be a little bit careful with the numbers, because the numbers refer to different things. So, if you get an image of a person, And then you take a picture of them with a camera and you ask a human whether it's the same person. Humans get that right about 98% of the time. And machines can now get that right. This is a one-to-one comparison. Are these two pictures of the same person? Machines can now, the best ones, the best algorithms, can get this right about 99.8% of the time. And in fact, there's an annual competition. Actually, I'm not sure it's annual anymore, but there's a quite regularly hosted competition called Mega Face, which is like the Olympics of facial recognition. And essentially, all of the different algorithms that have been devised by the big American tech companies, by the Chinese, by the Russians, they all have this big competition. And so that's one of the different contests there, which is, are these two people the same? How accurate are you? Another round of the contest is, here's a picture and here's a database of 1 million people. Can you find the right person in that database? And that, for that kind of task, these systems, you know, at their best, they're now only right about 80% of the time. So if you use a system like that and you're you know, watching people going into a ball game or something, and you're comparing people who walk past against a big database, then you're going to get a lot more false matches. And so that's why it's a bit dangerous to talk about, you know, these things are 99.8% accurate versus, you know, anything else, because the statistics depend very much on whether you're doing a one-to-many lookup or a one-to-one comparison.
No, I appreciate you make that point, and let's just buttress it a little bit and say, and also the accuracy drops the darker your skin tone gets. I mean, that's also an issue.
There is an issue that these systems have been trained using data sets that are not very diverse. And so they're much less accurate when it comes to recognizing non-white people. And there have been various efforts to fix that. But then those efforts themselves have run into controversy because a lot of them were basically, the way you build a more diverse database is by just stealing images off the internet. So there was a bit of a kerfuffle about that too. And in fact, if you look, I mean, I've been following this field for several years, and there's been just one controversy after another. There was an app in Russia called Find Face, and essentially the Russian equivalent of Facebook, which is called VKontakte, allows, although you can have a private profile, your profile images are all public. So it was quite easy for the developers of that app to scrape the images of 100 million Russians and then build an app that literally lets you point your phone at somebody in a bar or on a train and say, who is this? And it will very often, you know, it'll very quickly get you to the right person. Mm-hmm. And they claim this is a dating app, and that it's so that if you see someone you like the look of in a bar, you can send them a message. And that sounds very creepy to me. But then, of course, they also licensed the technology to the police, and they started to use it, you know, with CCTV footage, you know, who's this, and so on and so on. So these different uses all blur into each other, but it also reminds you that when you, it's not just about, you know, is your face visible in public, it's is your face visible on the internet as well.
Yeah.
And I think the scary thing behind all of this is the fact that the combination of very high-resolution cameras, you can take a picture of a crowd now with a high-res camera, and you can make what's called a gigapixel image. It's where you take a picture of, you know, 100,000 people gathering somewhere, and you can zoom in on any individual face and see it very sharply. And you can take pictures with drones, and we've seen those being used in Hong Kong as well. So it's this is eroding freedom of association, because you can go to a protest, someone can take your picture. Years later, perhaps, an authoritarian government takes control in your country, and they say, right, we're going to round up all the people who went to that protest. And so you can be found, you know, years later. And that's, I think, that's what is foremost in the minds of the Hong Kong protesters who are covering up their faces. Mm-hmm. In theory, Hong Kong becomes a full part of the Chinese legal system and becomes like the rest of China in 2047. But China obviously wants that to happen a bit sooner.
Well, so Tom, let's talk then about the other methods. I'm going to fulfill my promise to listeners here.
Of course,
because they're fascinating, right? I mean, as good as the technology is getting, machine vision is different than human vision. So researchers and artists are coming up with some pretty low-tech ways to thwart the facial recognition technology. I mean, first of all, tell us a little bit about, for example, Adam Harvey. He's an American artist and researcher who created something called computer vision dazzle. Like, even just doing makeup differently on your face can be
exactly
enough.
Yeah. So dazzle makeup is the kind of geometric patterns that were painted on warships, and it's a very kind of it's a good look actually. In fact, a friend of mine, his Twitter profile picture is him wearing this dazzle makeup. But essentially, it's very kind of bright geometric patterns, a bit like, you know, what people have in The Lion King or something like that. And what that does is it throws off the facial recognition system because it's expecting a shape to have, you know, two eyes and a nose and a mouth, kind of in fairly predictable positions relative to each other, and it's not expecting these big squiggles that are a completely different color. So he developed that as a way to do it. Now, the thing about it is it's very obvious that you're wearing it. And it's the same with, you know, if you wear a ski mask and there's a Japanese
right.
system that is a kind of funny set of patterned sunglasses, and you kind of look like... It is like you're out of a sci-fi movie or something. So there have been various sort of low-tech things like that. So the guy who developed Dazzle has moved on to a slightly more subtle approach called Hyperface, and this is Adam Harvey again, and he's at New York University. And Hyperface is where you fool the cameras in a slightly different way by wearing patterns on your clothes that have essentially blobs that look sort of vaguely face-like. So you've got sort of two eyes or two blobs with another blob in the middle and then another long blob underneath. And so that throws off the vision system because it sees what appear to be lots and lots and lots of faces all over your clothes, and it can't figure out which is your actual face. You've got the drawback with that is it's very obvious that you're wearing a thing that is designed to subvert.
Beyond just making a fashion statement.
So
I take your point. Like, these efforts, it's obvious that you're trying to thwart a system here. But there's The Economist has written about other things like a baseball cap that's simply fitted with infrared LEDs, and that isn't. And they sort of shine a LED pattern on your face or an infrared pattern on your face, and that's enough to thwart
Exactly. It's really clever. And it's because the cameras that facial recognition systems use don't work the same way as the human eye, and they can see into the infrared. So that's a kind of light that we can't see, but it's the kind of light that is used, for example, when you unlock an iPhone with Face ID, it's actually shining a grid of LED, of infrared lights on your face to map the shape of your face. So essentially, they're using a similar trick here, and they have a baseball cap, and there are tiny light-emitting diodes underneath the peak of the cap, and they shine light onto your face. So they light up your face in a way that can't be seen by humans, but changes the way that your face looks to a camera that is being used for facial recognition. So firstly, they used this to show that they could just completely fool the camera, so they didn't realize that it was looking at a face at all. And then they realized that by fiddling exactly how the illumination of the face is done with this invisible infrared light, they could fool FaceNet, which is one of the big facial recognition algorithms, into thinking that one person was another person. So this is a very clever trick because there's no outward evidence to, you know, if you're going to a protest, the police can't tell that you've got a system on your head that's thwarting a facial recognition system, but actually you have.
Well, let's take a quick call here. Marina is calling from Auburn, Alabama. Marina, you're on the air.
Hi there. I was wondering if there has been any notable legal success globally in persons trying to pursue action against some of this violations of facial recognition.
Well, thanks for your call, Marina. Tom, any successes in courts of law around the world pushing back against facial recognition technology?
That's a good question. Not that I know of. It's been sort of efforts. So there have been lobby groups in Britain saying, and I think some experimental use by the police, is they've now said they're not going to proceed with that. But I don't know that it's got to the point where people have said I've been, you know, wrongly identified using this technology. There was a case in Britain where somebody was walking past a police van that was testing a facial recognition system. He had a scarf on, and they said, you have to take the scarf off. And he said, why? And they said, because we're scanning everyone with this new system. And he said, well, I don't want to be scanned by it. And he ended up getting into an argument with the police and fined, but he was fined for using threatening language against the policeman rather than, you know, refusing to cooperate with a facial recognition system. So I think we really are in a situation where the law around this is all quite fluid, and I think it's good that we're having this debate and we're talking about it, because this is something that does change, you know, our ability to be anonymous in public in ways that people might not realize. And they may not care about it now, but they may care about it in the future if the government in their country changes.
Well, let's listen to a little bit about how that debate is playing out in the United States, because, for example, in May, the House Oversight and Reform Committee held hearings on the use of facial recognition technology by government and business. I mean, business is a big part of this. Here, Nima Singh Guliani of the ACLU explains to Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan that the FBI probably already knows who you are and what you look like.
So the FBI has massive databases, and they use external partners as well. So one of the things they do is they use state driver's license databases. I think, you know, up to 18 states have been reportedly used by the FBI. They use passport photos.
So my question is, did the state legislature and the governor actually pass legislation saying it was okay for the FBI to access every single person in their state who has a driver's license?
No, and that's the problem. This was all in secret.
That's from a House Oversight Reform and Reform Committee hearing held in May. Tom Standage, you know, the argument for, in the law enforcement and government context, for using facial recognition technology is, of course, one of safety, right? The TSA here in the United States is launching pilot programs in many airports, saying, like, your face will be scanned as you board an airplane. There's an opt-out provision for that. I'm not sure many people know that, but you can opt out of it. But ultimately, the idea is safety and giving law enforcement another tool to do their jobs to protect the public. I mean, how law enforcement must see these efforts, high tech and low tech, to thwart that facial recognition technology is problematic, no?
Yeah, well, I don't think we should lump in all uses of facial recognition the same way, because there are ways it can be useful and people can give their consent and they can say, actually, I'm happy to do this. You know, and obviously when I'm doing something like going through passport control, it's important that either a human or a machine can see my face and match it with the face in my passport. And it's much more convenient when I'm going through an airport if, you know, there are shorter queues because they're using a machine to do that. So in that situation, that's one thing. And we see very often that, you know, people will put aside concerns they might have about privacy,
yeah,
if they get some convenience out of it. Now, in this case, I don't think it's unreasonable that you can look at the faces of people going through passport control.
We've got just a couple of seconds, Tom.
Yeah, well, the Hong Kong protesters are worried about something else. That's the thing. They're worried about lack of consent. They're worried about they don't know what's being done with these pictures. And they're worried about the political implications of what might happen in the future.
Well, Tom Standage, deputy editor and former technology editor at The Economist, thank you so much. This is On Point.